Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 29, 2015. The U.S. State Department reacts to the report of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan.
Warring parties have perpetrated further acts of violence and abuse with innocent civilians, particularly women and children, as their victims. So although the leaders of these parties signed a peace agreement in August, violence has continued and the South Sudanese people continue to suffer. And we want to see that suffering.
And the spokesman of the South Sudan Army accuses the United Nations mission in South Sudan of helping rebels loyal to Riek Machar.
On 20th October 2015, UNMISS badges were used to supply the rebels' IOs with the logistic items. On the 26th of this month, October, UN badges have loaded 40 drums of fuel.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. State Department says while it welcomes the African Union's decision to finally release its report on atrocities committed in South Sudan, it finds the report disturbing. The African Union has found evidence that war crimes, crimes against humanity, and human rights abuses were committed by both government forces and the SPLA in opposition since fighting erupted in late 2013. The State Department spokesman John Kirby says the United States is well aware of the atrocities outlined in the 315-page report.
And we are, of course, reviewing those detailed findings and recommendations on institutional reform. We commend the commissioners and their staff for their tireless efforts to cast light on these horrific abuses that occurred during the early stages of the conflict, first in Juba and subsequently elsewhere in the country as the violence spread.
Fighting has persisted even though the leaders of both sides agreed to a permanent ceasefire in the IGAD Plus brokered peace agreement signed by President Kiir and Riek Machar in August. Unity and Upper Nile states have seen continuous attacks by both government and rebels. The conflict has claimed tens of thousands of lives and has displaced at least 2.2 million people. Kirby says women and children suffered during the conflict.
In the months since the commission finished its investigations, warring parties have perpetrated further acts of violence and abuse with innocent civilians, particularly women and children, as their victims. So although the leaders of these parties signed a peace agreement in August, violence has continued and the South Sudanese people continue to suffer. And we want to see that suffering end.
The report says on page 117 that women, old and young, were gang-raped and left bleeding unconsciously. It also says children were forced to fight or even made to work as slaves of militias. The African Union Commission of Inquiry said it reached conclusion about who should face persecution for crimes against humanity, but did not release those names. It also identified core problems in South Sudan, including the militarization of the government and society and giving too much power to the president. In Juba, South Sudan's army spokesman today accused the United Nations mission in South Sudan of helping rebels of the SPLA in opposition in Upper Nile State. As Waki Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Colonel Philip Aguer gave details of what he calls unmissed support to the rebels.
SPLA Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer told the reporters at SPLA headquarters in Juba today that the UN mission had first requested permission to use its badges to travel from Malakal to Melut, Renk and back to Malakal in order to distribute humanitarian services. Aguer says the SPLA Chief of General Staff granted UNMISS its request. But he says UNMISS then began supplying goods and services to rebels.
The UN mission in South Sudan refused to take the SPLA liaison officers to accompany their mission on the river. On 20th October 2015, UNMISS badges were used to supply the rebels' IOs with the logistic items. On the 26th of this month, October, UN badges left Malut and stopped at rebel base in Kaka, Al-Tijariya, and offloaded 40 drums of fuel. The rebels celebrated the reception of fuels and food items from UNMISS.
Aguirre says the rebels celebrated the reception of fuel and food items from UNMISS, claiming they used the supplies to strengthen their positions to attack SPLA forces in Upper Nile State. Aguirre says yesterday and today, forces commanded by rebel leaders Gabriel Tanginya and Johnson Oloni launched several attacks on SPLA positions in Wedakona and Torguang villages in Upper Nile State. He says the incident throws into question UNMISS stated neutrality in South Sudan.
This is an unfortunate scenario that is going alongside with the negotiation on security arrangement and the ceasefire modalities in Addis Ababa currently.
When asked to explain the accusations leveled today by Aguirre, UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Ganta said she does not have much information and the only thing she can say is that UNMISS is working on the issue to solve it. It is not the first time the SPLA forces have accused UNMISS of helping the rebels in South Sudan. Last year, the government of South Sudan accused UNMISS of supporting Machar's rebels with the ammunition and providing protection to rebel forces. UNMISS dismissed the allegations, calling them baseless. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
At the same time, a deputy spokesperson for the SPLA in opposition says they have detained five people who were traveling on a river barge belonging to the United Nations mission in South Sudan. Dixon Galwak says there are also 16 UN peacekeepers on board the barge. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports.
SPLA-IO spokesman Dixon Galwak says the UN barge was detained yesterday. He says it was moving from Malakal heading to Renk in the northern part of Upper Nile State. Galwak says their forces stopped the barge as part of a routine check in the area. He says the five military personnel being detained are two soldiers and three national security officers. Galwak says the barge has weapons on board but would not elaborate.
We have the document evidence showing that this document, they were issued in the Ministry of Defense in Juba.
UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Kantar says UNMISS officials are engaged in talks with the SPLA-IO to have the barge released.
I can't tell you much because we're trying to solve the issue as I'm talking to you.
Galwak says the barge will be released after its investigation is completed.
They are in secure place and they are safe. What we need is to investigate because the UN now is claiming the ownership of the barge. So we want to know, and after investigation, we want to know exactly who is owning the barge, and then from there it would be released. If it is for the UN, then we would release it. And if it would be for South Sudan, then we are going to detain the barge and then we will release the personnel.
Galwak would not say when he thought the barge or its personnel on board would be released. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
President Salva Kiir yesterday issued a decree confirming an earlier decision by the main policy-making body of the ruling SPLM party, the National Liberation Council, to dissolve the party's national secretariat. In the decree read on state television and radio, the president, who is also the ruling party's chairman, issued another decree appointing Minister for Electricity, Dams, Irrigation and Water Resources, Gemma Nunu Kumba, as the SPLM Deputy Secretary General. Kiir also directed Nunu to act as the SPLM's Secretary General effective from today. According to the decree, Nunu is expected to recommend to Mr. Kiir the names of officials to appoint to various positions in the party's secretariat. While some SPLM officials have welcomed the NLC's decision to dissolve the party's secretariat, others have criticized it, saying the move sends the wrong message to South Sudanese as well as the international community. The Arusha Agreement states that all the three factions of the party, the government and the SPLA in opposition led by Riek Machar and the SPLM former detainees led by Pagana Mum, should work together to restructure the party. Leaders of South Sudan's Greater Equatorial Region say there should be more consultation and public debate before South Sudan's 10 states are split into 28 as ordered by President Salva Kiir. The leaders say even though they support the idea of creating more states, More work needs to be done on determining the borders and the capitals of the proposed states. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
The leaders of Central, Eastern and Western Equatorial States met for the second time in 2 weeks yesterday in Juba. Canon Clement Janda, a member of South Sudan's Council of States, confirms that elders welcomed the creation of more states.
However, we would have wished to do a little bit of an evaluation of how the 10 states had performed before we even start to get to the 28. Where have the 10 states done better or where have they failed? Even as the president was thinking of creating more states, there should be more consultation with the people in a broader way.
A bill seeking to amend South Sudan's constitution and legalize Mr. Kiir's order creating the 28 states is now before parliament. Janda says leaders of the Greater Equatoria region believe more consultations should be held before parliament votes on the matter.
The government should work through the period of the transition to ensure that the federal institutions are developed during the transition to bring proper devolution of power to the people of South Sudan.
The National Alliance, an umbrella organization of 18 South Sudanese opposition political parties, has petitioned the Supreme Court seeking to reverse President Kiir's order. Some South Sudan-based analysts have also said Mr. Kiir's decision to create more states was unconstitutional and would negatively affect implementation of the peace agreement signed by the president and anti-opposition leader Riek Machar in August. Janda says despite Mr. Kiir's decision to create more states, elders and leaders from the Equatorial region expect the government and the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition to implement the peace agreement, as he put it, in letter and spirit.
Our view is that there needs to be space or room for discussion and sharing of ideas all across so that the whole country would be a lot more richer when people can debate and discuss and say the cons and the pros of a process like this.
In the decree establishing the 28 new states, President Kiir said his decision was guided by South Sudan's transitional constitution. He also said one purpose of the new states is to decentralize power, placing resources closer to rural populations and reducing the size of the national government. Ambassador Ezekiel Lulgat-Kwos, Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLM-IO, has argued that President Kiir took a unilateral decision based purely on tribal considerations. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan has just released a statement on the peacekeepers detained by SPLM in opposition commanders. UN spokesperson Stephen Durich told reporters that the only weapons on the barge are the ones belonging to UN peacekeepers.
Earlier today, we can report that all 20 of the detained UN peacekeepers were extracted by helicopter from Kaka to Malakal. The opposition has, however, kept in Kaka all 12 of the UN contractors, the barge, and some of the weaponry and equipment belonging to peacekeepers. The mission is extremely concerned that the national crew of the barge have also not been released. The barge has not been returned to the UN, neither has its equipment. The mission calls on Riek Machar to take his responsibilities as leader of the SPLM in opposition and uphold his commitments to the United Nations that everything be returned safely. The mission demands that unmissed national contractors be released immediately, unharmed and unhurt. UNMISS further recalls that attacks against peacekeepers and other UN staff can constitute a war crime, which could be brought to the International Criminal Court.
That was UN spokesman Stephen Durich speaking from the United Nations headquarters in New York this past hour. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new report says LRA is still active in parts of South Sudan and still gets money for guns from elephant poaching. More on that story when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would your friends and family describe you?
I'm different into different everywhere. One thing they will say about me is that I go out of my way to satisfy people. Most certainly my family members knows that.
As a funny person, I think, yeah. Because, I like to tell funny stories. And I'm a funny person. Find myself funny sometimes because I even laugh at myself.
Most of my friends think I'm crazy, yeah. Even my family, they be like, I'm crazy.
My family, I think, would describe me as a stubborn boy, yeah. But now I think I'm growing old. They're starting to appreciate me more. They're starting telling me the way they see me, you know.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The ENAF project, which works to end genocide and crimes against humanity, says the Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA, is undeniable in decline. The LRA, one of the Africa's most violent armed groups, once had thousands of soldiers at its prime. According to a new report by the ENAF project, it's now down to about 120 armed fighters. But they are still active in South Sudan, and one of the reasons the LRA is still doing business in illegal trade of ivory. Ian Bior reports.
Elephant poaching is one of the most lucrative crimes in the world, falling right behind drugs, weapons, and human trafficking. Jackson Miller is an analyst with the D.C.-based global conflict and security firm. He says elephant poachers are rarely caught and arrested.
This is definitely an issue of enforcement, where there might be laws in place that, you know, could jail elephant poachers and could jail other sort of wildlife criminals. But there's really no capacity on the ground to actually carry out those laws.
Democratic U.S. Congressman Ed Royce of California hopes to change that with the bill he's introduced called the Global Anti-Poaching Act. If Congress passes it into law, it will make wildlife trafficking a crime consistent with money laundering, which is punishable by international law. Roy says this measure is needed because the revenue that groups like the LRA receive from selling ivory is used to fuel violent conflicts in Africa. According to the new report, the LRA has carried out 150 attacks, 500 civilian abductions, and caused the displacement of over 200,000 people in South Sudan alone. Royce believes if this bill becomes law, it will pressure the governments abroad to stop the trade of elephant tusks in their countries. And he says Sudan is one of the LRA's key partners in elephant poaching.
The government of Khartoum, we have found in the past that the ammunition that Joseph Kony trades for, there are units of the army that sell fresh new ammunition. And we know that it's 25 cases of this ammunition for every tusk. So we do know that military units have been involved directly with Kony.
Kony, who is widely believed to be the commander-in-chief of the LRA, is wanted by the International Criminal Court on 33 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity since 2005. The ENAF Project believes he is now based in Sudan's Kafia Kingi, which is just outside of South Sudan's northwest border. Royce worries that Kony's close proximity to the unstable region of Darfur could further exacerbate efforts to bring peace to that region. The project points out that Sudanese Janjaweed fighters in Darfur also make money from the ivory trade and use the profits to buy weapons. Al-Shabaab in Somalia also makes money off the illegal trade of elephant tusks. Miller says there's good reason so many armed groups kill elephants. One elephant tusk alone can produce a month's worth of income.
At each point in the supply chain, the price of ivory itself skyrockets at each distinct point in the supply chain. You know, you have bush market prices. You have bush market prices for a tusk ranging from, you know, $10 to $30. And then in an African urban market, like let's say Kisangani, Kinshasa, or even Cairo, that price might jump into the three digits, into hundreds of dollars. And then in East Asian retail markets and in auction houses in Beijing, we've seen prices skyrocket up to $2,100 per kilo.
The ENAF Project warns that unless tough action is taken to stop the LRA and other groups from killing elephants for their tusks, Africa's elephant population, which was 20,000 in 1980 and now less than 1,000, could be extinct within 4 years. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
The Catholic Diocese of Wau says it wants hundreds of people who have been living or doing business on 3 square kilometer plot of church land to vacate it. The church offered the land several years ago to allow temporary shelters to be built for some of Wau's homeless and for regional government to develop a market. But Catholic officials now say they never intended for the homes and markets to be permanent fixtures, as Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Church officials say the land was offered on a temporary basis to the town and to settlers, but it has been forcefully grabbed. The church says it wants the land back so that it can build schools and pastoral centers. Church officials are working with Wau Municipal Council to evict merchants from parts of the land where Lokoloko Market stands. The diocesan officials say shops and semi-permanent buildings are being erected illegally in the market. They say they are serious about getting their land back. Around 100 shop and kiosk owners and 200 households will be affected by the eviction order, according to officials. Pio John is the land coordinator for Wau Catholic Diocese. He says many individuals are illegally investing in the land that was offered by the church on a short-term basis.
We are only afraid that you leave people there, if you don't keep them aware, and then you will get problem with them because somebody will build a permanent building there. We expect it with the peace, there will be a progress, and this is where we can put some progress for the church.
Many of the people who are on the land acknowledge that it belongs to the church, but they say that now that they have established their businesses on the land, they don't want to leave. Mother of 6, Angelina Dominic, sells tea in Lokoloko Market. She says she fears she will lose customers if she has to relocate.
I have been making tea in this market for almost 7 years. I need this job to feed my brothers and my 6 children. Where should I go to start a new business? In the new market they want us to relocate to, the rent is about 500 South Sudanese pound a month, and I cannot afford that.
Another tea lady, Salwa Adam, says moving her business might mean her children will have to drop out of school.
I have paid 6 months advance rent for this shop, and we cannot just relocate like this. It would affect my income, and that means I might not be able to pay school fees. They should have given us at least 6 months' notice.
Wow, town authorities have designated a new market for all of the merchants who will be affected by the eviction order. The affected companies include slaughterhouses that were built and are operated by the government. Wau Mayor Elia Camilo Dimo says all businesses that are currently in Lokoloko Market must move to the new location by the end of this week.
Lokoloko Market is not longer belong to the municipality. You know that area is belong to the Roman Catholic Church of Wau. We have informed those in Lokoloko to evict the place. We gave them October 31st that Lokoloko supposed to be free from any business.
John, Wau Diocese Land Coordinator, says families who live on the church land will be allowed to stay on until they have somewhere else to go. But he says there are conditions attached to their remaining on the church land. They may not build a permanent structure and may not plant any trees. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
President Muhammadu Buhari won a historic election victory in Nigeria this year, in part by pledging to tackle corruption. But nearly 5 months after he took office, some people are skeptical about whether he's doing enough to make good on his promise. Chris Stein reports from the capital, Abuja.
As he campaigned for office earlier this year, supporters of Mr. Buhari often reminded the public of his term as a military head of state in the 1980s, when corrupt people were put in jail and whip-wielding enforcers kept order on the streets. He pledged to put an end to the billion-dollar corruption scandals that plagued his opponent, President Goodluck Jonathan, and which allegedly drained the national treasury while nearly half of all Nigerians remained in poverty. Buhari has kept up the anti-corruption rhetoric since taking office in May. He has made several headline-grabbing moves, like publicly declaring his assets, axing the heads of the state oil company, and announcing he will handle the responsibilities of petroleum minister himself. Clement Nwankwo of the Policy and Legal Advocacy Center in Abuja says real institutional reforms are needed to prevent graft.
Beyond arresting or prosecuting previous government appointees, it's unclear to Nigerians what new systems are being put in place.
The former National Security Advisor has been arrested and is facing trial on money laundering and weapons charges. Police searched the home of the former petroleum minister and confiscated a few $1,000. Lawal Shuaibu, deputy national chairman of Buhari's All Progressives Congress Party, predicts lengthy court battles for those who are accused of corruption. He says the defendants will be able to outspend the government's more modestly paid lawyers.
They operate within the budget approved for them by the National Assembly. And then the corrupt people being investigated will hire the senior lawyers and pay them in billions.
He says the next phase of Buhari's war on corruption will come once his cabinet takes office. Buhari only appointed ministers this month, and they are still being screened by the Senate. Nwankwo says with no leadership in the ministries to issue contracts and inaugurate projects, it's hard to tell if the way of doing business in Nigeria has changed.
And it is only when you spend this money that you can tell whether you have worked out a strategy to deal with corruption or not.
The global drop in the price of oil has strained Nigeria's budget, lending increased urgency to the fight against graft and waste. The government gets about 70% of its revenue from sales of crude. Buhari has begun reviews of government contracts. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A deputy spokesperson for SPLA-IO says they are detaining five people on board an unmissed barge in Upper Nile State. Dixon Gatluk says there are also UN peacekeepers on board and weapons on board. Gatluk says the UN barge was detained yesterday. UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric told reporters the only weapons on the barge are the ones belonging to the peacekeepers. He says all 20 of the detained unmissed peacekeepers were extracted earlier today by helicopter from Kaka to Malakal. The U.S. State Department says while it welcomes the African Union's decision to release its report on atrocities committed in South Sudan, it finds the report disturbing. The African Union found evidence that brutal war crimes were committed by both sides since fighting erupted in late 2013. State Department spokesman John Kirby says the U.S. is well aware of the atrocities outlined in the 315-page report and reviewing the detailed findings. And finally, President Kiir yesterday issued a decree confirming an earlier decision by the main policy-making body of the SPLM ruling party, the National Liberation Council, to dissolve the party's national secretariat. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Nabni Baledna Together by Emmanuel Kembe. We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Nabni Bele Together. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope to meet you back here again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.